Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raw Charges Crunch Cast. My name is Alex Ackerman, and I am here with my friend and fellow writer over at Raw Charge, Brandon Curtis.
How's it going, everybody?
And we'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of our podcast. I guess we'll just kind of dive right in here and start off with the recap of last weekend. It was a certainly more promising weekend and a much better ending than the one that we talked about last time around with this podcast.
For sure.
The Crunch went into Binghamton Friday night and they pulled out a 4-3 win on the road down there. And I got to admit, I wasn't at that game. I know Brandon wasn't either. We do things other than this, believe it or not. But it seemed like a pretty strong showing for the team. I tell you, Dumont and Bourneval, I th really think that they're going to be some of our strongest players this year. They had a couple of goals that night, and they really kind of seemed to lead the way.
I totally agree with you. Gabriel Dumont, as I said last week, is a guy that as soon as the news broke that Tampa Bay had inked him to a contract, I knew that he was going to be a big part of the team this year. And he's a guy who has scored at every level he's played at. And Michael Bourneval is a proven NHL talent too. Last year and the year before probably would have had much better years, but he was sidelined with some concussion issues. So I think as long as both of them are able to stay healthy and they keep them on the same line, that they're going to be a force for the Crunch all year long.
Yeah, in addition to those two, we also had a goal from Matthew Pekka. It was nice to see him get on the board. And someone that we talked up quite a bit last week, Adam Erne, also got a goal in that game. He started things off not even 2 minutes into the first period. So that's always kind of fun when guys that you've praised a lot, and we both kind of praised him as our MVP of the year, I believe. When we made our predictions, to see him go up and get a goal that day was kind of fun.
No, for sure. Ernie's a guy that, and another one last year that was sidelined with injuries. So, I mean, same as Dumont and Bourneval, if this kid can stay healthy, there's no reason that by the end of the season he's knocking on the door for a spot in Tampa. And I would be very shocked if he didn't start the year in Tampa Bay out of camp next year.
I agree. It's going to hurt to lose that one, but he certainly has put in a lot of work during the off season. He's flying fast and hard, and I think you're right. I think that we'll probably end up losing him, obviously to his benefit and to Tampa's benefit at the start of next season.
I think he might have had a fight last weekend too. Yeah,
I'm looking.
Sunday in Wilkes-Barre. Yeah, he got into his
Oh,
first
well.
fighting major of the year. So there you go, Adam.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that happened in that Wilkes-Barre game. But before that game happened, we had the Providence Bruin come into town on Saturday night, and that was the first time since 2013-14 that they had come up to Syracuse. And that game was a strong showing for the Crunch, although it was surprisingly physical for two teams that haven't really faced each other in the past couple of years.
Yeah, it was a real fun game to watch, and let's also not forget that Adam Wilcox, who also started Friday night, picked up the win in Binghamton, got back-to-back starts, started against Providence, and we told you last week that we think that they're slowly going to start weaning Godlevsky's out of the mix, and what do you know, Wilcox with two back-to-back starts, and that's something that was unheard of last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the Crunch said in their release this week that it was the first time in his pro career that he's gotten back-to-back starts. And I mean, he certainly deserved them. He worked really, really hard in both of those games.
Yeah, I mean, also worth noting, Wilcox stood on his head as always. Stopped probably, I didn't count, but I'd say at least like three breakaways. Not sure how many odd man rushes, but he played very, very well. I also want to point out the fact that on Syracuse's first goal of the game Saturday night, what a play by PL3! He gets the puck in the left wing corner and just digs it out of the corner and brings it to the net front. Almost cashed in himself there and got his first goal in a Crunch uniform, but Cam Darcy was there to clean it up. And not only good for PL3, but good for Cam Darcy too. I mean, this is a kid last year who was, I always liked him. People gave him a lot of crap, said that he didn't really do much It's good to see him. I mean, you can tell this year that he's skating with a lot more confidence.
Definitely. I was actually just looking at the scoring sheet there, and it was Cam Darcy with assists from PL3 and Dylan Blugis. So that's kind of a funky group to be working together there
Yeah,
on
for
that
sure.
goal. But it was really fun to see him go down and get that score. It's actually really nice. That night had a really kind of vivid collection of guys pitching in and helping out. And I think that as the injury bug kind of starts going, and we have a couple guys right now that are in different injury situations, and we have a thing up in Tampa that we're not sure how that's going to go, we're going to start needing to see more contributions from everybody. You know, Bourneval and Dumont have been awesome, but it was great to see Yanni Gourde get a goal Saturday night. Jeremy Morin, who you have talked up a ton, got two helpers Saturday night. Henry Ekinen, who has really kind of taken advantage of the chance that he's been given in this lineup, he got an assist that night.
Yep, you had one
Mike
Friday night as
Helmo,
well.
yeah. Mike Helmo was out there. So, I mean, we had some nice contributions from quite a few players in those two games, Friday and Saturday, which was awesome to see.
No, yeah, it's great. The depth's there. We've talked about it, and as you just said, it was really nice to see guys like Jeremy Morin, who's waited his turn to get in the lineup, still looking for his first goal in a Crunch uniform, but making plays and picking up a couple helpers. And it's real nice to see Mike Helmo get into the action. He had a goal Saturday night and the lone goal in Sunday's contest, but we'll get to that in a minute. But no, it's great to see the depth, and we know that with Tampa, injuries are going to come. It's not a matter of, if it's going to happen, it's a matter of when. So it's good to see that these guys are out there and they're starting to get their feet underneath them.
Yeah, and you gave credit to poor Daniel Walcott before the show, but I'm going to kind of mention that now. We mentioned how tough that game Saturday night was. It was a really physical contest, and I'm pretty sure that that probably played somewhat into Sunday's, can I call it a disaster?
Sure.
Okay, Sunday's disaster down in Wilkes-Barre. Our players got hit hard Saturday night. Poor Walcott, he went down. Was it a puck to the face? Is that what we think it was? Because
Yeah,
honestly, I wasn't sure what happened.
from my seat, it was tough to visually make out what happened, but
Okay.
you definitely heard it. He
Yeah.
got caught pretty good, and I think the Post Standard ended up reporting that he took, what, 8 stitches, something like that.
Oh gosh. I mean, I was honestly surprised and fairly impressed. He came back out with that full face cage on, and he just kept right on trucking, and that was impressive.
He's a tough kid, former
Yeah.
football player.
Definitely. So yeah, that was, the guys really kind of ground that one out, and it was a fun game to watch for sure.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do think that there was a lot of kind of hangovers from that game Saturday into Sunday when the Crunch went down to Wilkes-Barre. They just can't seem to pull much together against the Penguins lately. Syracuse went down with a 6-1 loss there down in Wilkes-Barre, and that was, from most accounts, a very painful game to watch.
Yeah, I mean, like we said before the show went on the air, neither of us watched the game, but from just looking at the score sheet, I can tell you one thing: the Crunch cannot stop Kevin Porter. This guy's got 4 goals on the season, and all four came in back-to-back weekends against Syracuse. Two shorthanded breakaways the weekend prior to last, and had 2 goals this past weekend, one on the power play. Crunch cannot stop Wilkes-Barre, and certainly cannot keep the puck out of the back of the net when he finds the stick of Kevin Porter.
Oh, and it's with two different goalies too, right? Didn't Wilcox? No, Wilcox wasn't in that last time we went to Wilkes-Barre, right? It was Christers.
I think. Don't quote
Okay.
me on that.
No, that's okay. I should have looked that up, but I totally blanked on that. But yeah, I can't figure out what exactly is going on. I mean, we talked a little bit about how they did, Wilkes-Barre got 29 shots off. They had three different power play opportunities. Two of those they scored during. So it just, I don't know if it's a if it's a defense thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. From what I've seen on the highlights, there were certainly a couple goals that it looked like Christers would have wanted back.
Yeah.
But to put the blame on anybody in particular wouldn't be fair for me to do, as I truthfully wasn't tuned in for that one. And I'm kind of glad I wasn't. But if there is one positive that we can take out of that game, the lone goal, as I stated, was scored by Mike Helmo, his second goal in as many nights. So it's really good to see him getting his feet underneath them, and the assist coming from Cam Darcy and Slater Cuckoo. So
yeah. And I like the timing of that goal too. It came pretty much right in the first 5 minutes of the third period. The Crunch was down 4-0 at that point in time. And one of the things that we have mentioned this year is that even when Syracuse is down in a game, they haven't quite given up. They haven't raised that white flag, which is something that we had seen in previous seasons, where if they get down by even just a goal or two, they're done. You can tell they're done. You can look at the bench. You can look at the effort on the ice. They're checked out. We haven't seen that yet this year. And I think that Helmo goal at the beginning of the third period also speaks to that, which is kind of nice.
Right. And you can't help but think that this new attitude from the Crunch that we honestly haven't seen in a couple years now, the never say die attitude, has a lot to do with Benoit Grue and whatever he's saying in the locker room. Because, you know, even when the Crunch are getting beat up 6-1, it's, like you said, it's good to see them battling back. That's something that we've seen for the better part of the beginning of the season so far. So kudos to them for that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was always certain players who would still have that attitude, obviously. You know, one of them was Mike Angelides, who is no longer with us. But it was not team-wide. And so far this season, it really seems like the change has been team-wide. And that's been something that we've needed. We've needed that revamp of the team's attitude. And so that's been really encouraging. And like you said, kudos definitely to the coaching staff for encouraging that and the players for taking on that culture.
Yeah, kudos to Luke Witkowski and Gabriel Dumont, whoever else the floating A goes on any given night. I mean, there's no doubt that the leadership core, it's something that we were worried about coming out of last season with the departure of Mike Angelides. So it's good to see that a guy like Luke and a guy like Gabriel are, you know, making a difference and getting the guys going.
Yeah, now hopefully that Maddie's back. I would like to see that A stick with Terramina for as long as he's down here, just because I think that he's earned it, and I think that his play certainly shows that kind of an attitude too.
Yeah, and that's something worth noting. Matt Terramina back to Syracuse with Cuckoo going back up to Tampa, something that we'll touch on later. But I just want to take a second to talk about Matt Terramina, because I think that year in and year out, this guy has been one of the best players in the league, and he's one of the very best at his position, and he just never really gets credit for it. He's a guy that, after last season, he was the guy that I said put the C on. He's a guy who, you know, people look at him and he is supposed to be an offensive-minded first defenseman, but he's good in his own zone. He moves the puck. He can shoot the puck. He's proved that plenty of times. Off the ice, he's one of the greatest guys you'll ever talk to, and I just want to make it known that Matt Terramina is a guy that deserves a lot more credit than he's been given.
Oh, definitely. I think that he's one of our most well-balanced players on the team. Like you said, not only does he have that offensive touch, hopefully we can get him back out there on the power play now that he's back down here.
Please.
But he's so good defensively. You know, I have one jersey from the Calder Cup Finals back in 2013, and it's his. Just because looking at the choices from those games that were available at the time, he was the one that I knew that I wanted. And so that was, you know, definitely even back when he was first with us in that first year of the affiliation, that talent and that level of effort was still there. And now hopefully, I know that back spasms were really painful for him during that time. I really hope that's been cleared up, because when he's at the top of his game, it's amazing to see.
Right. And whether people want to believe it or not, I know everybody has their opinion on the situation, but as I said last week, 10 out of 10 times, if I have to pick a guy to quarterback my power play, and I'm given the choice of Matt Terramina or Slater Koekkoek, 10 out of 10 times I'm putting Matt Terramina on my blue line, and that's no knock against Slater Koekkoek. That is just how good I really think Matt Terramina is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. I think he has a lot of heart, and I definitely hope that that A stays with him. You know, honestly, I think that the only reason why he didn't get the C was just because of the way the depth chart is. You know, as I kind of touched on last week, I don't think Witkowski is really in Tampa's long-term plans anymore. That's good for down here. He can use that to work in the community and take that captainship and continue some of the work that Mike did. And we talked about the locker room and the attitude change that we've seen. But I think that, you know, Tampa Bay wants Matty to be available more so than not if they need him to go up. Unfortunately, this past time it was to go up and sit, which I imagine is probably frustrating for him as well as for us. But, you know, honestly, I think that that was one of the contributing factors as far as who got the C was just where they fit into the organization at this point in time.
No, I completely agree with you. And like you said, hopefully Gru puts the A on Matt Terramina. I don't know why it's got to be a rotating A. I mean, I guess he's, I don't know, but yeah. Matt Terramina is definitely a guy that deserves it and somebody that I really hope is in Syracuse for a long time.
Yeah, it would be nice to kind of, we sort of have lost all of those players that had been here for multiple years. And so it would be nice if we could see some guys stick around for another couple of years. You know, I would like to see where Witkowski could go with the C if he had a couple seasons here. You know, I'm sure that one of the reasons that Angelidis became so beloved is because he had 4 seasons here.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult, not impossible. We've had captains who have been captains for 1 season who have certainly made their impressions on the hearts of the fans, but it's a little bit more difficult. You know, we also had captains who were here for 1 season who nobody really remembers.
Joe DePenta.
Exactly.
Love you, know, you Joe, I mean, wherever you are.
Yeah, it's, you know, and even guys like Derek McKenzie, I have a hard time remembering that he was captain. You know, he's now captain with Florida, which is awesome for him. But he was only captain for a season, and he spent part of that in Columbus. So it can be difficult when you're going back and forth and you're one of those guys that's not here all the time to really make your mark with the city. So it would be interesting to see if we could have a couple of these guys stick around for a few seasons and see where they can go with that leadership role.
I completely agree with you. Unfortunately, with minor league hockey, as you know, I don't have to tell you, it's a constant rotating door, but hopefully some of these guys can stick around. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, are you ready to get into our rapid fire round?
Let's tackle some of these questions.
All right. I'm going to let you, I think, go first this time so that I can kind of get my thoughts together on some of these.
Or I'm just going to go right off the top of my head. No preparation.
Oh, okay. All right. So it looks like first up, a situation that's very near and dear to my heart and that's killing me on a daily basis. My Skittles is causing a little bit of a conundrum with the team and with the fans. So Brandon, I don't know. What do you think is going to happen here?
I said it last week. Unfortunately, I just think Krister Zgudlevsky's time in Syracuse is nearing its end. He's a guy that I've always supported, even when people have been coming at him and treating him partially. I think it's hard to keep the puck out of your net no matter who you are when you don't have a defense in front of you. And that's no knock against the guys that have been on the crunch blue line for the last couple of seasons. But, I mean, it's difficult. And kudos for Wilcox for being able to step up and stop 5 breakaways a game and 6 odd man rushes. But, yeah, Krister's is a guy, he's extremely talented. I don't need to tell any of you that. Consistency is his biggest issue. And I think best case scenario for Krister Zgudlevsky's is he ends up getting moved somewhere and the move ends up shoring up the crunch blue line, the crunch get a blue liner back, or another veteran goaltender comes in. Because while I think Gudlevski's needs to be moved, I'm not so sure that Nick Riopel is the guy to come up and back up Wilcox at this point. So my prediction is by the deadline, Christers is elsewhere, and the Crunch have a brand new goaltending tandem.
Okay. Yeah, don't scare me with – I mean, I like Nick a lot. I think that he's got a really nice Twitter presence. He interacts well with his fans.
For sure.
But you're scaring me a little bit with that idea there, Brandon. a lot of people I think probably could accuse me of – not exactly handling this issue with objectivity.
You never. Come on now.
You know, the level of adoration I have for Christers is fairly obvious. Goalies tend to work their way into my heart much easier than some other positions. You know, I was a big Riku Helenius fan while he was here, and I know that situation didn't end well.
No.
I loved Carl Gehring both times he was here. Carl was my first favorite Crunch player. Not only was he my first favorite Crunch player, but he was my first favorite hockey player.
Wow.
He was, you know, back in 2004, 2005, he was kind of the guy that captured my attention and really got me into hockey. Someday maybe we'll have a throwback podcast where we'll talk about some of these guys more in depth. But
I like that. That's a good idea.
You know, Carl's story is just a really cool one. You know, he never made the NHL for any significant amount of time. I think he backed up one game. But, starting from that season, goaltenders have always been kind of the soft spot in my heart. But for Christers, I think it's mental at this point in time. I think that there's a lot going on in his head, and I'm not sure that this organization is necessarily the place where he feels the most secure. And we've seen it with netminders again and again, where once their mental game is off, it's very difficult for them to regain that. And, you know, I think that Christers has all of the talent in the world. I know that he can play this game at this level. I know that he can play the game at the NHL level. I don't know if he has the confidence now to play it in this organization with whatever's going on. It seems like ever since Andre Vavilevsky kind of came in and sort of usurped his position, Christer's mental game hasn't been there. And, you know, you're giving him until the deadline. I honestly think that that's generous. We were talking a little bit before the show about the Dustin Tokarski thing when he was here in the first year of the organization and how he wasn't playing that badly at all. But there was some up and down weirdness that happened. And when the Lightning had the chance to get Cedric Desjardins in here, they went ahead and did it. And I can't help but wonder if they see a chance to do something, they are going to just step in and we're going to see Christers go.
Right. It's unfortunate, but I mean, it's definitely something that's needed. Like you said, Christers confident. I mean, I can't speak for KG, but it seems as if his confidence has been shot for a while now, and the best case scenario, in my opinion, is he gets a fresh start elsewhere. My question for you is about Carl Gehring. How'd you feel when he came back into town with Manitoba and the Crunch gave him the business there?
I still have some pictures from that game. That's the only game in 13 seasons where I watched practice down in the other end. So that was how much it meant to be able to see Carl play again. That it was also up until last year when I lived in Rochester and actually did just go to one or two Amherst games against other teams on my own. That was also the only time where I ever went and saw another AHL team play someone who wasn't the Crunch. I saw, I think when he was with San Antonio, when he was with the Rampage, I saw him play the Rampage in Rochester one game. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that was one of those hard ones. You know, it would be kind of like if Mike Angelides came back into town. It was difficult to watch. But then, of course, the next season he was back home, so that was kind of fun.
Fun, a little fun fact, and call me basic, but my first favorite Crunch player ever It has to be number 41, John Morasty. That's just me. I mean, I'm in a boat with a lot of other people. I understand that, but moving on.
And you know, like I said, I could don't get me on the topic of these old guys because I will seriously just talk for the next hour about them all.
that'll be its own podcast. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. So yeah, I don't blame you with your Morasty pick either, for sure. Don't blame you at all. All right. So before we get too off topic here, with the return of Taramina and with you know, the healthy list has changed a little bit. The injury report has changed a little bit. So what had been solved by call-ups and injuries is now a problem again. We now have too many vets hanging around. At one point, we had 7. Now I think we're down to 6, right? Because yeah, McGinnis is still out. Okay. So we can only dress 5, according to AHL rules, which... you know, it's hard. That's actually one of the rules that I tend to agree with, just because of, you know, the goal and aim of the AHL is to be a developmental league. And as much as I would love to have 17 Mike Angelides on our team out there every single night, I realize that's not the point. So, you know, now we're in the situation again where we got to be sitting a vet every game. So who do you think is going to be sitting first, Brandon?
This is really, really, really tough because... Yeah. The guy that I said before had a great weekend last weekend. I can't see Jeremy Morin taking a seat.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It's real hard. It's hard. It's a hard question to answer. I mean, if I had to pick somebody, I think you have to rotate night, like by game, somebody different has to sit because there's way too much talent out of these veterans that you can't afford to have a Jeremy Morin sitting another 4 or 5 games in a row.
Right.
So I'm thinking the first two at the top of the list, unfortunately, Morin is probably going to sit. And then after that, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we have Conacher, Condra, Taramina, PL3, Dumont, and Morin. Obviously, Dumont's never going to sit.
No, Dumont's not going to sit.
And he shouldn't sit.
No.
You know, and the same thing, honestly, with Conacher and Taramina. Neither one of those two should ever sit.
Yeah, I mean, I still think PL3 is definitely at the top of the list, along with Morin. But I also don't think it's that fair to PL3 right now, because he's playing good hockey. He's an enforcer first, but I'm sorry to guys like Morasty and, you know, Sujin and all those guys, but they were strictly fighters. PL3 is a guy who can go out there and he can clobber you. But he also plays good hockey.
He does, and he plays smart hockey. You know, he hasn't taken any unnecessary penalties this year, which can sometimes be a problem with those tougher guys, is that sometimes they take penalties when your team can least afford them. He doesn't. He plays very smart hockey in addition to the rough hockey.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a good situation for the Crunch to be in, but it's tough on Ben Grew. Like I said, the first two are going to be Morin and PL3.
And, you know, I mean, as much as I appreciate the game that Eric Condra has played down here, and I think we've kind of gotten off of our rapid-fire routine, but I guess it's all right. It's our podcast, so we can do whatever we want to. You know, as much as I appreciate the game that he's brought down here, I also think that he could be a candidate to be someone who sits. And like you said, you rotate them. You know, do I think he should sit every game for the next 10 games? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think that's the problem when they first started rotating is more. I don't know exactly how many games in a row, but gosh, Morin he's had to have sat at least 4 in a row. And then Ekinen said, I don't even know how many, but he's not a veteran, but still.
Yeah, I think that was just too many forwards, and he just wasn't at high on the depth chart at the time. You know, so that was that. But you know, he's taken advantage though. He got into that roster. He's been scoring points, so good for Henry. But his situation is a little different. But I think you got to look at PL3 and Morin and Condra. But I would almost look at PL3 and Condra to sit before I would Morin at this point, for sure.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, it's a good problem to have. So I guess we'll find out Friday night.
I was at that Rochester game. I actually felt bad after I decided I wasn't going to go. One of my students from Rochester last year asked, their parents texted me and was like, "Are you going to the game on Friday?" I'm like, "Oh, no." So one of our buddies over at Raw Charge asked if we would touch on Slater Cuckoo's time here since he is now back up with the Lightning. And he had a fantastic game with Tampa Bay
For sure.
two nights ago. I mean, he really went back up there, and you could tell he's hungry to prove that he belongs up there. But how do you think he did down here?
Like you said, he went up to Tampa. I watched that game, and I don't want to accuse Slater of anything of, taking time off while he was in Syracuse or anything, because I don't think he did that. But you can definitely tell that when he's up in Tampa, he's skating with a purpose. And his time in Syracuse, it was just eh for me because he didn't stand out for doing anything bad, and he didn't stand out for doing anything good. I'm not sure how many points he had. He definitely had a couple of helpers. And I guess part of being a defenseman is if you're not noticed, it's probably a good thing, but I guess I just expected more from Slater to come down here and, be that guy on the power play while Tarantino was away and really give this team some energy, and I'm not sure he did that.
Looking at his stats, he played five games down here and he had two assists in those five games. So, that's generally not what we necessarily would expect from him. In 72 games with us, his first season here, he had 26 points. 60 games last season, he had 15 points. Like you said, he is kind of expected to be your power play guy. He's expected to be your kind of well-rounded offensive defenseman. It used last season when he was out there, you'd notice him. He'd be making the plays. He would be quick on his feet. I know one of the things that the coaching staff from Tampa praised him from that first game back was his legs and how fast he was and how well he played the game using his legs and his speed. I don't know if we saw that while he was down here. And to me, it's kind of hard to talk to, like you said, it almost is. It's hard to talk to his performance down here. And, maybe it is sort of this difference between when you're in the AHL, this is what we want you working on. When you're in the NHL, this is what we expect of you. And you would assume that they would match up. Because theoretically, what they do down here is supposed to prepare them for life in the NHL. But we've seen a couple of examples where, with specific players, they want them to work on something different down here than they might up there.
Right.
Luke was one example I used last season. He goes up there, and they almost expect a more physical game from him with less emphasis on his actual role, which is a defenseman. We saw that with Jonathan Drouin when he came down here. They had specific things that he needed to work on that he might not necessarily then use in the NHL. It just kind of depends on what assignments they give him. And maybe like you said before we came on the air, maybe while he was when he got sent down, they said, "Work on your game in your own end, and then when we call you back up, we'll go from there." But I just didn't see a whole lot of spark out there from him this time around.
No, and I think I don't want to say that Slater, like I said, I'm not saying that he came down here and just shrugged it off and didn't play hockey. But I mean, you could definitely tell that he hadn't played in a while. He'd been sitting in Tampa, and I mean, the first couple games were probably him trying to get his conditioning back and trying to get his feet underneath him. But I don't know. I didn't see a whole lot from him. I'm glad he went up to Tampa, and right away he made that awesome pass that I think Stamkos was the one who tipped it home. So good for him, and hopefully his success up there continues. But we'll keep Maddie for now.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you probably have a point. I mean, obviously, this is a really small sample size that we're working with, and
Exactly.
it came off of a time period where he had been sitting for a very long time in hockey time, anyways. So, that's definitely a good point for us to, kind of pick apart that. Maybe it is too small of a sample size. That's certainly very possible, and we're just being really picky because we want our team to succeed.
We like to talk.
Yeah, that too. All right. So finally, one additional thing that is probably pertinent at this point in time. Jonathan Drouin is awaiting more reports from the doctors up there in Tampa about it kind of looked like he took a shoulder to the head during their last game. He was kept out for precautionary reasons. They're waiting on more reports. The Lightning don't play after tonight. They don't play again until Saturday. I honestly don't think he'll be out for that long just because of the fact that they haven't made a call up yet. And that's not usually Tampa's MO. You know, especially they have no healthy scratch forwards right now. Cedric Paquette drew in tonight. He was their only healthy scratch forward last game. So they're out of healthy scratches as far as forwards are concerned. So I really don't think he'll be out for that long given that. But just in case, if he is out for any extended period of time, who do you see getting the next call up there to Tampa?
Well, I mean, I think the answer to this question is rather simple. Corey Conacher is definitely the first guy that they're going to look at. He got to go up there. He got to play one game. And I'm not sure who they played, but anyway, he went up there. He got his game in, and they sent him right back down. But Corey's a guy who has kept his head up through all of this, and you could tell that no matter where he's playing, he gives it his all, and he's really trying to get back up there to Tampa in a full-time role, and I don't think he's that far off. If Tampa wasn't as good and as talented up front as they are, he would easily, you know, be in one of their starting four lines. So I think Conacher's definitely the first guy. And then my second, I would have said Tanner Rashard, but we're not so sure what's going on with Tanner right now. He's in limbo with an injury at the current moment. So we're not so sure about that. But after Conacher, I'd have to go with another obvious one and say Joel Vermeen.
Okay. I guess for me, it would almost depend on how well they were willing to experiment with positions, because I kind of think Gabriel Dumont has definitely earned himself a look, but I know obviously we're talking about wingers versus center, and I'm not sure they've been willing in the past to kind of play around with that, but that also hasn't brought them as much success as I think they were hoping it was going to. So it would be interesting to me to see Dumont get that chance, but I don't know if at this point in time, if they're going to be willing to play around with positions like that. So I think that kind of takes him out of the running, unfortunately.
Let's also hope that, a similar situation doesn't occur with Gabriel Dumont as it did with Jeff Tambellini last year, who completely lit it up in Syracuse and never got his look. And in my opinion, I can't say for sure, but I think that's definitely one of the main reasons that sent him packing overseas.
Oh, I completely agree. Jeff did absolutely everything that they asked of him down here. And everybody, even Bolt Prospects, was clamoring for him to get a look up there just based on what he was doing down here. And it never happened. And like you said, he kind of shrugged his shoulders and decided that, you know, this wasn't for him, and he went overseas. And, you know, I think that was a real loss to the organization, that he felt like he had no choice and that, you know, they weren't going to give him a chance. I agree with you. I think that would be really sad to see that happen, and I really hope that it doesn't. I think that Corey Conacher is going to probably be the next one to go up, especially if they have that extended time that they're looking at. I think that he has that proven thing. He knows the organization. He knows the systems. He knows the coaching staff. I think that alone is definitely in his favor. And he's worked his butt off. You know, he's come down here. He's done really, really well. So, yeah, I think that Corey is definitely going to be the next one to go up, even though he already had that one call up. But he's probably going to be racking up those frequent flyer miles this season.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. He's a guy who really shouldn't even be here.
Yeah.
But we'll take him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, let's take a look at the injury report real quick in Syracuse. Tanner Rashard, I believe I didn't talk to Ben Grew last weekend, so I'm not exactly sure what the diagnosis on Tanner is. I think he was ill. He was sick or something.
I don't, honestly, they're being strangely tight-lipped about the injuries that are going on down here. And like I know they did say that Cameron Darcy was out with some kind of eye thing.
Yeah, something that sounded gross.
Yeah, it sounded very gross, which I'm glad that got cleared up because God forbid that starts spreading around to the team. And then like we still don't exactly know what's wrong with McGinn.
Yeah.
They haven't shared what the surgery was, and they haven't told us what he actually ended up injuring. So that's a little odd. But yeah, so I'm not sure exactly what's going on with Richard, but at last we knew he was day to day. Obviously, it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow night at Rochester.
Yeah, I heard he was day to day, and last time I heard Ben Grew said that he will probably draw into the lineup this weekend. Dylan Blue just also got hurt somehow. Before the show came on, Alex and I spoke, and neither of us really seen what happened. And I don't think they've gone on record to say really what has happened.
Nope. The only thing they've said is that he needed to get an MRI, but that doesn't that means basically nothing.
Right. Last I saw, it came back negative, and he was considered day to day. And I think Ben Grew said that he probably wasn't going to get into the lineup this weekend, which is good for Adam Comrie and good for the next guy we're going to discuss, and that's Dominic Machine, who has been out since last Saturday in Wilkes-Barre, and it looks like he's ready to go.
That's, I think, exciting. I know that I have seen him. He's been doing some stuff for the Movember, which is actually something we should probably touch on. But he's been doing some promotional stuff with that. So I know that it seems like they're getting him back at least into the public eye again. So I would assume that that means that he's pretty much ready to go. And I appreciate that you had to say his name first, because no matter how often I tell myself it's pronounced machine, that is not how I end up saying it based on how it is spelled. So,
He needs a Skittles-esque nickname is what needs to be done.
apparently, because I will probably never be able to look at that word and say it correctly to anybody. And that's, yeah. But yeah, so it'll be good to see him back out there. I think that he has a lot of growth that he can achieve this season, but he's going to have to stay healthy in order to do so.
Yeah, he's a guy who, a weird comparison, but he, in a way, reminds me of a Radko Gudas type of guy. He hasn't really shown it too much in Syracuse, but he's a guy who is really gritty. He's not afraid to throw the body. And I think as time goes on, he's going to be a real fun kid to watch.
Yeah, I remember when he was drafted, and I was very excited to see him come through because at the time, I was a big fan of Gudas and everything that he was doing with the organization. I'm not so much of a fan now at this point in time. I don't appreciate some of the plays that he makes, and I think that he is a better hockey player than what those plays represent. But that's for another day. But yeah, I agree. I think that that's probably the closest comparison we have right now with him, and I think that he could really grow into a solid presence on our blue line, but he needs to get out there and he needs to play.
And hopefully we get to see that this weekend.
Yes, so first up, we are back in Rochester tomorrow night. It seems, or well, actually, and by the time this comes out, it'll be tonight. It'll be Friday. So it seems like we spend about half the season playing the Amerks, even though it's really only, what is it, 10 games or 8 this year? I don't even remember.
Something like that. I don't know. We really don't get to escape the North Division, unfortunately.
No, and I get it. I mean, I know that I've had conversations with guys all over in the organization, with the AHL about this, and I get it. It comes down to money. People pay when Utica comes in, and people don't necessarily pay when the Texas teams come in.
Right.
But seeing the Bruins come in on Saturday night was kind of cool because we haven't seen them in a couple seasons.
And
So.
I have a question in regards to that game. I looked at the attendance after that game, and it said it was only like 4,800 something. Does that seem right to you? Because I mean, there was quite a few empty seats, but I don't know if it was under 5,000.
I agree. I would have thought it would have been higher based on who I saw around. And I think that, there were quite a few Boston fans there, which was neat to see too, because a lot of the times we don't necessarily get the parent club fans coming in. And I know like the their fan club was there as well. Their booster club came down. So that total surprises me too. I would have thought that it would have been over 5,000 for sure.
Yeah, that was weird. I can't remember the last time I seen a Crunch game with an attendance under 5,000 on a Saturday night. It was strange to me.
Yeah, and there wasn't anything else going on. I guess if there would have been a basketball game or something, I could have understood, but there wasn't anything else going on. So that is, that's odd.
But anyhow, back to what's important. The Crunch are head down to Rochester. It will be today, and both teams same exact record: 4 wins, 3 regulation losses, for 8 points. I still go by points. I don't pay attention to this point percentage thing. It's too confusing for me. So definitely a big game at this early point of the season, as far as standings are concerned. So it should be a fun one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Rochester and Buffalo have been put through the injury mill in the past couple of days, it seems like. I know that I follow a couple people from both organizations, and it seems like there's been a lot of talk about this person's injured, that person's injured, call up from Rochester. So I think that they're hurting a little bit more than we are at this point in time. Hopefully the Crunch will, you hate to say, hopefully the Crunch will be able to take advantage of that. But at the same time, hopefully the Crunch will be able to take advantage of that. I believe I saw a tweet earlier in the day that said that Christers is starting.
Really?
Yep. So I would love, 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 love for this to be a rebound game for him. I know that Ben Bishop, I think actually I do think it was Bolt Prospects who drew the comparison between the fact that Ben Bishop had a very similar bounce back game the other night when Tampa played. And it would be lovely if Christers would be able to pull off the same thing. I do hope that our defense is strong in front of him to give him the best opportunity he has to be able to have that bounce back game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little surprised that they're going with Christers on Friday night. But hey, I'm not gonna argue it. I like what Ben's doing here. He's by putting him back out there tomorrow. Well, today. This is gonna drive me insane all year. By putting him right back out there, it's telling him that he still has utmost confidence in him, and he's giving him the chance to redeem himself. So hopefully Christers and the team as a whole are able to come together and give him a big win, because this, I mean, if Syracuse goes down to Rochester and they end up getting blown out, I think you could see a move happen much quicker than I anticipated. So hopefully they go down there and they play good hockey.
Yeah, I agree. Especially since lovely Utica is coming into the Memorial Saturday night, and it would be amazing to be able to face them riding off of a win Friday night, trying to redeem ourselves on Saturday with a loss Friday. As always, I'm sure that the Comets will be bringing their fans with them. They always have a strong presence in the War Memorial. And lucky me, sitting over there in section 23, gets to deal with them all night. So anytime the Crunch can win when Utica's in town, it is really helpful to me since I'm surrounded by their fans all night.
Look,
Hint, hint.
and this game against Utica is not going to be an easy one, I presume. Utica is a dumpster fire right now, to be kind. They just went down to St. John's, got a point on Tuesday. Yes, Tuesday they got a point, ended up losing in overtime. Mark Barberio got the game winner on that one for the Ice
That
Caps.
was a beautiful goal. Did you see that goal?
Yeah, beautiful cross ice feed. Yeah, that was.
Oh, that was like the Mark Barberio of old. That was amazing. All right, sorry. Fangirl moment. Oh, continue.
So they dropped that one Tuesday in overtime to St. John's, and then last night ended up, well, What was the final score? They ended up getting thumped. I think it was like 6-2, 6-3, something like that. So Utica is 2-6-1 to start the year, a total of 5 points in 9 games played. They're at the bottom of the North Division. And I think that could spell trouble for Syracuse, because not only does Utica always play well in the War Memorial, but they're out looking for blood. They need to win some hockey games.
Absolutely, and they'd love to win them against Syracuse. You know, I think that that's become probably one of the biggest rivalries in the AHL right now. And, you know, the owners of both teams kind of play it up. It would be a little bit more interesting if Vancouver and Tampa had a little bit more of a rivalry, but that's okay. You know, I think that there is a lot to be said for the business that brings both teams and the publicity that it brings both teams. But I agree with you. I think sometimes the crunch can be lulled into a little bit of a false sense of security when these teams come in.
Yeah.
I actually think that that's what happened the last time Utica was in town. You know, Syracuse had beaten Utica fairly soundly in the preseason. Both teams were pretty much stocked with whoever they were going to have for the season during those two games, and the Crunch won single-handedly, pretty much. Utica didn't put up much of a fight. It was a very unbalanced competition for both of those preseason games. They face each other for the first time in that regular season, and Utica looked like the better team.
No, for sure, and it's worth noting that Utica's coming into this game. One of their best scoring threats, I believe, got called up to Vancouver, and he got injured, and he's out for 2 to 3 weeks last time I heard. So Jason Megna's out of action. So that makes it a little bit easier on Syracuse as far as keeping the puck out of the net.
Yeah, it does. Just hopefully, like I said, we're going to need everybody to show up, you know, blue line on down to the goaltending. And, you know, it's like, Christers, you know that I love you, but it's getting hard to keep defending you here, honey. I'm running out of things to say at this point in time. So, you
Come
know,
on,
I mean, I think that from goaltending on up, you know, a really good, strong performance this weekend would just do a lot in general. You know, there's certainly nothing to be concerned about at this point in time. It's early in the season. The Crunch has had some really strong showings. And then to balance it out, they've had some really poor showings. But I think that after a 6-1 loss on the road on Sunday, to come into this weekend and be pretty close to home and be able to get two strong wins out of it, that would be ideal, obviously.
Completely agree. Hoping for a good weekend. It should be a fun one. Your goal for next week's episode of the podcast is Dominic Machine needs a nickname.
All right.
That's the
goal.
I will
try my best to come up with one. I was going to come up with one for Ben Grew, just because I was convinced I was never going to be able to pronounce his name. But every time I would say something about that, the Crunch would, you know, somehow magically tweet out the pronunciation guide again. So I never quite got to develop my nickname for our new head coach. Doesn't mean there's not one coming, but, you know, it was just, it's funny how those things happen sometimes.
Oh, there you go, folks. That's what you have to look forward to in the future. That's been another fun episode, though, of the Crunch Cast, and looking forward to another one next week. Hopefully the Crunch go out and can pick up 4 out of 4 points.
Absolutely. So thank you all for joining us for this week's episode of the Crunch Cast. That's brought to you by Raw Charge, and we hope you have a very safe weekend. Come on out to Syracuse on Saturday night and watch the Crunch take on Utica. I'm sure that it will be a show. We just hope it'll be a good one.
Thanks, everybody.